It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here I am, and here we go. Let me tell you, it is just, there is so much in the news that Scott is over here. I mean, he's jumping up and down, like a two-year-old. He can hardly stand it. He can't wait. Look at that smile. He can't wait to tell you all of the stuff that's happening in the market. So let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Scott, what do you say to that?
Not much happened today.
That's what I knew you were going to say. Oh, you love the build up, don't you?
Not much happened. On Tuesday's market, the Dow was up 33 points, S&P up 2.7, NASDAQ up 2, oil up $1.89. There's really not much happening. Decent move in gold in the other direction today. Gold up 23 at 1748. There were almost exactly no economic reports on Tuesday. And I say almost no because the only one that we did get on Tuesday was consumer credit rose for the second month in a row for December. This is a December number, up $19 billion after a $20 billion gain in November.
So more people are borrowing.
Yeah, now that includes credit cards, car loans, student loans. It's the whole
thing.
But not
housing.
But not mortgages.
Okay.
Yeah, consumer credit. So, but that really was about it.
So does that mean people are borrowing to get by, or they're borrowing because they're more bullish about the economic forecast?
Well, sentiment numbers have been getting better. So I think it's probably more good news than bad news. There has been a lot of lending going on for car purchases, and a lot of car purchases being made. So that's a big component of that particular number. So, I mean, I think in this particular instance, that's probably a pretty good sign. We had some more earnings on Tuesday. Coca-Cola had a nice earnings number. Yum Brands had a really nice earnings number, said that they are selling a lot of Kentucky Fried Chicken in China. Nothing?
Is it General Tso's chicken?
I don't know.
I'll try to think of something quick. But
BP posted earnings slightly above forecast and raised their dividend. That's good news for BP shareholders. Apple was up on the day after they announced a partnership with two Canadian telecom firms to get a launch on the iTV, which is basically a TV that has an iPad type of interface.
Cool.
Yeah, MasterCard was up after a nice earnings announcement, raised its dividend to 30 cents a share, so good news there. And Chairman Ben was on Capitol Hill again on Tuesday talking to the Senate Budget Committee this time. He basically said the exact same thing that he told Congress.
Don't spend more than you take in.
Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, his review of the economy is still very tepid. He says things are growing very, very, very slowly. He says their target unemployment rate, or I should say their estimate of a long-run normal rate of unemployment, is between 5.2% and 6%. So that's a long way.
We got
here.
A long way to go to get there.
That is a long way.
How many jobs
here.
We got to add? What do we got to add about? How many we got to add for every percentage point?
Well, let's
half
see.
Half a million?
Yeah,
million?
Probably something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot.
So that's a lot.
And it's going to be a long time. He also told the Senate lawmakers that setting U.S. fiscal policy on a sustainable path should be their top priority. And he went back and sort of castigated them a little bit about the debt ceiling nonsense that we had back in the fall and said, you know, if you guys keep doing this, it's going to be a problem. We can't just, you know, put things to the edge and then pretend nothing happened.
Yeah, I guess the potential impact there is not only do you run the risk of literally having a shock to our system, but, you know, it raises questions about whether the U.S. government, we, the American taxpayers, are good for our debt, are good for our money.
Yeah, and it really has a big impact on consumer confidence if we just don't think that the debt ceiling is going to be raised. And he made a particular reference to how business owners can't plan their business if they don't know how sustainable the government is and their fiscal policy.
Well, if small businesses especially aren't confident about the economy, they aren't as enthused about hiring. And, of course, we've talked on previous shows about the small business owner being the one that does a lot of the hiring.
Yeah. Some other things in his testimony today that I thought you would like in particular, he said the economic recovery in the U.S. has largely been led by the manufacturing sector. He said that parts of the European Union are certainly in recession, but they have taken steps to try to insulate from that as much as possible. And he also said, and I thought this was very good news, that U.S. banks have made progress, quite a bit of progress, in protecting themselves from instability in Europe. And I know you want to talk a little bit more about Greece as we go forward, but I think overall, generally positive testimony from Chairman Ben. And he said the same thing we've been saying. Things are going the right direction, but just very, very slowly.
So we're not stuck in a rut, but we got to step on the gas.
Yeah, we're pedaling instead of driving.
Okay. Well, we'll talk more about how we pedal out of here. And we've got to get to Greece because it just can't, speaking of things that can't go on like they are.
Yeah.
So stick around. We're going to take a really short break and we'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Well, let's break it down. Before we do, let's do a real quick recap, Scott, on the international markets, and then we'll get to Greece as our favorite talking point. Someday we'll be able to stop talking about Greece. Okay, around the world, Brazil is on a tear.
Emerging markets in general are doing quite
well. They are really, they're up 15% year to date. Germany, almost 15%, and I think that has a lot to do with their being kind of the beacon of strength in Europe. Italy, surprisingly up 8.5%.
Yeah, that's because they have been successful in enacting political reform, as opposed to Greece, which has done nothing. I mean, that's the difference between good, solid political leadership and no leadership.
Well, there you are. We'll leave it right there, ladies and gentlemen. Hong Kong up 12, India up 14.5. The thing I was going to say, and I think your point's right on, Scott, the other thing I was going to mention is some of these, of course, are coming off some serious losses last year in the 20% range. You know,
India was the worst market in the world last year.
Is that right? Yeah. Where they ended up down over 20-some percent, right?
Right, right.
Well, our market, we ended up basically flat for 2011. And so far this year, year-to-date, Dow's up about 5, and the S&P 500's up about 7. But that's on top of a flat year,
right?
Roughly. These other countries, while we're hearing them and we're talking about them having these stronger performance numbers for so far this year, you know, we're only like barely a little over a month into the new year, but they're coming off of some pretty weak numbers last year. So, but okay, I know you're dying to hear it, ladies and gentlemen. We got to talk about Greece. Okay, so the latest is that they've put off their kind of final decision making. Is it all coming down to austerity? Because isn't everybody on strike now again over there?
They're on strike because of the austerity. But here's what has to happen between now and March 1st in order for Greece to get the bailout payment that they need to
pay. That's $170 billion.
Right. You ready? There's a handful of them. First, the political parties in Greece have to agree on what the deal is going to be, what the levels of austerity are going to be, and all that kind of stuff.
But hasn't Europe pretty much told them what it needs to be?
Well, they've told them what they want it to be, but the Greeks still have to get together and say, okay, you know, we'll come back with a resubmission of a proposal or something like that. So that's the first thing, is that the Greeks need to cooperate with each other. That's not happening. Then the Greeks have to put together a written plan and give it to the European Central Bank and say, this is what we're going to do. That's basically the resubmission of the renegotiation. And then the Greeks have to go back with the private bondholders, which we've been talking about the so-called haircut. It's about 200 billion euros of bonds. And then the troika, the so-called troika, you know, the powers that be, the lords of the manor in Europe, need to approve that plan. And then the Eurozone finance ministers have to get together and sign off on all of that. And then they have to hope that Germany and Finland, which have to grant approval for their governments to commit, don't raise any kind of last-minute objections. All that has to happen between now and March 1st.
So we've got less than a month, less than 30 days. And, you know, our European friends do like to take some time off.
They do occasionally take some time
off. It's real likely that they're going to at least take the weekends, right?
Yeah, they've had 2 years to do this.
So what do we got? Maybe 20 working days?
Yeah.
All right, so...
I mean, it's not looking
you're
good.
A betting man. What do you think? You bet they get it done?
You know, the most interesting part about the whole thing to me is that this term default is a very gossamer type of term. Everybody's idea of what a default is and what the ramifications of a default are very, very, very different. So I think there's going to be some type of a default, although it's not going to be a black and white default that everybody can say, yeah, that's what happened and these are the consequences.
Well, that's really my question that I've been rolling around in my head. What if Europe says, you know what, I'm sorry, you don't seem to understand, we're trying to help you. You can't comply with our most basic requests, so the deal's off the table. No thank you. We're going to just let you do what you will. You've got everybody's striking for austerity, so we're done. There will be no $170 billion. What happens? They obviously default.
Yeah, now that's a hard default.
So then what happens
then? That's the worst case scenario. Then what happens is the so-called CDSs, the debt swap contracts start to trigger. And there are going to be some people that are not going to have the coverage for all the bonds that they're holding. That's kind of a long conversation that we can get into, but basically it means that a whole bunch of people are not going to be paid a whole bunch of money.
Okay. Serious stuff.
Yeah, and we're talking about banks now. We're not talking about just, you know, your neighbor. We're talking about banks who have on their books right now potentially millions or even billions of dollars worth of bonds that are going to turn into nothing.
Everybody takes a hit.
Yeah, some worse than others.
Okay. All right. Well, more to come on this, ladies and gentlemen. Very quick break, and we'll be back with a couple of news segments on Real Money. Stay tuned.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we are back, and as promised before that long break, I have some new segments for you where I'm trying to kind of capture and set the tone for things I want to talk to you about and share with you. So we have a special segment called...
That's a Load of Bull.
That's good stuff, isn't it? Yes, it is. Here is your Load of Bull, and I'm sure you get my drift. Let's see here. Candace Choi, I'm going to pronounce her name correctly because I'm about to disagree with her in a huge way. Candace Choi from the Associated Press wrote an article that I just happened to come across, which really got underneath my skin. So I'm going to call her article. Anybody else that writes stuff like this, it's a load of bull. And here's what she wrote, and I'll tell you what I think about it, which you probably already can tell. Yada, 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 millionaires, everybody like everybody else. Usual drive-by hit on the millionaires, and Mitt Romney released his records this week to show that he paid a tax rate of about 15% of his income. This relatively low figure is raising eyebrows because it's on par with the rate paid by many middle-class households. And that's despite this, blah, blah, blah. The disparity seems to fly in the face of the basic rule that tax rates move in tandem with wages. The more you earn, the more you pay. So Romney's disclosure may stir suspicions that the system is tilted toward the rich. Okay, well, there is so much there. That is a bunch of bull. Okay, let's break this down, and I'll support my argument. Number one, whose eyebrows are being raised? Ultra left-wing people that want to turn America into a socialist country? Most people don't want that. So whose eyebrows? And what basic rule is there that the people that make more are not only supposed to pay more in taxes because they make more, but they have to pay a larger percentage of what they make in taxes? What rule is that? And how did we get to such a it is a progressive tax system that we have. The more you make, the more you pay in taxes. So I find that very frustrating. And I did a quick analysis, again, perfectly maybe suited for our task today. I went to my favorite tax calculation website, moneychimp.com. So, and what I did is I did a quick analysis of a comparison of somebody who makes $1 million, those evil do-gooders, and $100,000 and a $30,000. These are all people making different levels of income. I assumed everybody was married, filing jointly. Well, that person making $30,000 a year would pay about $1,100 in tax, which is a 4% tax bracket. Pretty modest income tax. The person making $100,000 would pay about $12,500, which is 12% in income tax. And that $1 million income maker would pay $313,000 in taxes. Sounds ridiculous just saying it. 31% in tax. Now, here's where, if I look at that, Ms. Choi, I am sorry to disagree with you. I look at that and I go, that's already skewed. The person making $1 million is paying 31% versus a person making 30 is paying 4%. So I don't get how that's not already very progressive and very unfair to the person who makes more. But let me make my point here. Let's say that you compare these people. The person who makes the $1 million is paying 285 times the amount of tax that somebody makes $30,000 and 25 times the amount of tax that the person who makes $100,000. So if everybody, okay, so at the end of her article, she throws in just for fun, just as a parting gift, not everyone will get their tax rate down to 15%, but there are steps you can take. Well, I would love for everybody to be at 15% because that would be fair. You don't want things to be unfair. I agree. A simple structure for the tax code can be done where it takes care of all this for everybody. No deductions, no exemptions, no nothing, and everybody pays 15%. That, Ms. Choi, would be fair. Not this convoluted tax system that we have now and having people, and almost 50% of people that filed taxes in 2009 didn't pay any tax. And the top 1% of Americans pay 40% of all taxes, and 10% pay two-thirds. So our system is very skewed toward the person that makes more income, and I'm not sure that that is fair. All right, back in a short break, another 30-second commercial, but it's good stuff, and we'll be right back with another new segment. Stick around.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th.
Hey, that's another good program coming your way. TV, you believe it? I believe it. I've done it. It's a lot of work. New respect for folks that do television, ladies and gentlemen. It's a lot of work, but I hope you like it, and please tune in to that Channel 2, Mondays at 12:30, starting the 20th. And now it's time for our next new segment.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
So, top secret stuff. Do you want to know how those wealthy people make their money? Well, let me tell you, because I work with people that have money, some more than others, but you know what? It's not magic, and it's really not a secret. The things that people do is they don't jump all over the place. They build investment strategies. They hire money managers. They hire people to help them manage their money, and they develop a plan. They execute the plan, and they stick with the plan. They don't bounce around. I have seen people, I don't know if you would call it an emotional response or just maybe it's a little bit unable to commit. I've seen people bounce around between financial advisors. I've seen that happen to people. And it's like they just don't, they aren't satisfied. They won't let things run their course. They expect financial people to actually be able to tell the future. So then they also kind of trade on, you know, what happened yesterday, and don't really have a plan. And that's how you get yourself into big trouble. What you do is to really stack the deck in your favor, trying to trade or trying to time the market. Oh my gosh, I've got a chart here. Where is it? Let me share this with you. Oh, if I can find it, it'll be great. If you miss a few days, you really sink your ship. In fact, you know what? I'll pull it from memory. I've got it now. If you miss the 10 best trading days during the 2000s, you end up with a 50% loss. You believe that? So folks that say, hey, if you subscribe to my special system, my proprietary trading, and we get these stuff all the time. People send you stuff in the mail, newsletters, or you get invited to a seminar and they tell you they've got the best thing since sliced bread and here's how you make money. Well, you know what? It doesn't always work. And in fact, most of the time it doesn't. So how people make money, the people that really are deliberate about their money management, a lot of them use a buy and hold strategy. That's not set it and forget it like Ron Popeil's rotisserie chicken, okay? It's management that has a long-term perspective, and it's also you ride through the ups and downs. So if you look at 2011, it was a horrible year for trying to manage money. Trust me, I know, because it was a challenge for all advisors. But if you stick with the market, if you've got money that's in the market that should be there, you've got money that is going to be longer term, not money you need next week to buy a new car, not money you need to send your kid to college next year, but money that can be there longer term, then you ride through those ups and downs, the peaks and valleys. That's called buy and hold. Now, three things are essential for buy and hold. Number one, you got to have professional advice, I think. Now, is that self-serving? No. Whoever you go to, seek out advice and get somebody who can be detached from this, at least somewhat. It's what they do for a living. And also, that will help you in guiding you through when things get hairy, because they'll give you the perspective you need. The other thing that is absolutely essential, there's two more things. One of them is you can't invest all your money in a buy and hold right through it, no matter what strategy. You'll go bonkers. Unless you're Mr. Spock and you can simply click off your emotions, or data for my next generation fans, unless you can simply turn your emotions off, there's no way you're going to be able to do it if you've got all your money in the market. 50% maximum in a buy and hold strategy. And the third is to get your retirement income somewhere else. You don't take income from a buy and hold strategy because you're going to ride through those ups and downs. So that means the investments may be down in value when you decide you need to pull some money out, or if your plan calls from that. You want to take your income from your most conservative, most liquid, safest money you have, not the money that's longer term, not when you're buying a stock and saying, okay, I'm going to buy good quality stocks, good quality mutual funds, and hold them longer term. That's buy and hold, and make changes as I need to along the way, but not because of the market. That's how the wealthier people are successful with buy and hold. Long hauling ain't just for truckers, it's for investing too. All right, we're going to take another very quick break, and I think we've got one more exciting new segment for you. Stay tuned.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career. With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Okay, we are back, and as promised, are you ready for this? Here's another new segment. Hit it, Lisa.
That's like so totally disgusting. I'm like so sure. It's like barf me out. Ew, gag me with a spoon.
How about that? Isn't that good? Okay, gag me with a spoon. Throwback to, Valley Girls, and I think that was the 80s. All right, what gags me with a spoon today? Well, I'll tell you what gags me with a spoon on a regular basis, and maybe it's my perspective. You know, again, if you've listened to the show, you know I'm a hybrid advisor. I do both I do financial planning, and then I implement the solutions and the planning for clients using investments, security products, and then also insurance, annuities, other types of things that are safer. And then we address long-term care. We address the different things that can mess up your retirement. So I kind of sit in the middle, and I watch this ongoing war between the securities industry and the insurance industry, and they're all trying to get your money. So very often I'll use a combination of those things, unless it doesn't make sense for somebody. Sometimes it makes sense to do all securities or to only manage your money for a fee, and sometimes something else. But what I get sick of hearing and seeing, and I'll bet you do too, and if not, maybe you'll have a little different perspective after I share this with you, is from the securities industry side, pretty much what's happened is there's just been ongoing long-term propaganda, and that's really what it is, that you keep all your money invested. The encouragement is for investors to keep all their money invested in the market, no matter what happens, no matter where you are, what you're doing, just keep it rolling. And then when the market falls, there are two very well-rehearsed lines as part of this propaganda. And again, it's gagging me. One is, hey, everybody lost money. You're not alone. It'll come back. Well, two things there. I don't care if other people lost money. If I've got the wrong investment strategy, if you're 65 years old, or 60 or 55 or 70, whatever, wherever you are. And if you've got an allocation that's too aggressive, meaning you have too much in the market, I don't care if other people come back. Let's all sit in a circle and all get along and all be happy and everybody's doing wonderfully. That's great. But my focus is on my needs, and I need to not lose my money when I'm that close to retirement. So I don't care if other people lost money. I understand that happens, but that doesn't make me feel any better. And don't worry, it'll come back. Well, during my lifetime or yours, because if we're, you know, getting toward the end zone, we're 60, if you're 60 years old, and you're okay, I'm getting close to retirement, and the market drops 37% like it did in 2008. Well, that might just require you to work a little longer. I've had the very unpleasant task of actually having to tell somebody, you know what? I'm sorry, you can't retire yet. Do you want somebody to tell you that? Or worse yet, hey, you need to go back to work. Not what you want to hear. So this propaganda is, there you are. That's what it is. Let's be clear. There are things that are what I would call the at-risk options and things that are not at risk. And let's be clear about what those are. Let's not pretend that a stock portfolio that has 75 stocks in it, just because there's 75 stocks doesn't mean it can't go down in value. In fact, portfolios that are comprised all stocks are going to go down when the market falls. You know, when you're in the water and you're in a boat, if there's a perfect storm, I don't care what kind of boat you got, you're going to be in trouble. So be clear. What are securities? Securities, by definition, are things that are at risk. Common stocks of a corporation that's publicly traded. Preferred stocks, still a stock, still can lose value. Bonds can become worthless. Now, they are more secure than a stock because it's a different type of relationship. You're a lender, not an owner. Mutual funds, if they're investing in stocks and bonds, which is what they pretty much all do, still a security and still at risk, and mutual funds can go down. In fact, some mutual funds went down much more than the individual stocks because of the types of holdings. We saw that back in 2000 through 2002. Technology stocks made up a lot of growth funds, growth mutual funds at the time, and people lost a lot more than the overall market because technology took a bigger hit. Variable annuities are securities. They can go up and down in value. They can lose value. They can lose value. They can lose value, okay? Yes, it's an annuity, but it can still drop in value. Commercial paper is like a IOU note from a corporation. That can go, also be subject to the credit quality. Real estate investment trusts, these things are all securities that can go down in value. Now, or am I out of time? Is that it? I got one more. Am I done? That's it. That's all the time I got. I want to talk about not-at-risk securities and some of the things you can do. So you'll have to tune in next time. We'll talk about some of the safe places as an alternative. Thanks for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.